ever heard the story of Harry? He was a legend around here. Until one afternoon, he left and never came back. Turns out, Harry went and made himself a website using Squarespace. Used Squarespace domains to buy artisanseatcushions.com. And he built a beautiful site with an online store to sell his artisan seat cushions. Now Harry's sitting on a fortune. And if our Harry can do it, anyone can. Build your business at squarespace.com. Use offer code EVERYTHING for 10% off your website or domain.
This is Pod Populi, podcasts for the people.
Welcome back to Dateless in Del Rey, the podcast where we navigate modern love, relationships, second chances, and all the twists and turns of dating after 50. I'm Susan Shore. For years, we've been told technology would solve dating. The apps promised unlimited choices. The algorithms promised compatibility. The swipes promised efficiency. And yet, many people today feel more frustrated, disconnected, and exhausted than ever before. With spending more time searching and less time connecting, there are more options, more matches, more conversations, and somehow less love. So what if the problem isn't us? What if we're witnessing the end of the dating app era? Ta-da! What comes next? Today, we're talking with one of the most experienced dating and relationship coaches in the world, really, someone who's spent more than two decades helping men and women navigate attraction, relationships, and modern romance. Now we're asking him this fascinating question. Are dating apps dead? You know, according to recent research, more than 75% of Gen Z dating app users report experiencing dating app fatigue. They cite ghosting, superficial interactions, endless swiping, and burnout. And surveys show younger singles are increasingly looking for ways to meet people in real life, hobby groups, fitness classes, social events, over dating apps. And even major dating companies are taking notice. Apps like Bumble have begun investing in live events and in-person experiences. And Gen Z daters say shared values, lifestyle compatibility, and genuine conversation matters more than endless profile browsing. So those of us in older generations could definitely perhaps take a page from their book. Our quote of the day comes from author and futurist Alvin Toffler. The future always comes too fast and in the wrong order. And maybe that's exactly what's happening with dating. Technology arrived before we figured out what genuine connection actually means. My guest today is Scott McKay. That's Scott with one T. Scott and his wife, Emily, are the founders of X and Y Communications and the creators of Deserve What You Want coaching platform. And over the past 20 years, they've coached thousands of men and women worldwide, authored multiple books, and hosted podcasts and been featured on lots of other shows. So, Scott, welcome to Dateless in Del Rey.
Well, thank you very much, Susan, for that wonderful intro. Yeah, we're going to have quite the conversation today, and one that definitely needs to be had.
Right. I mean, it's so frustrating in a way, you know, just at the moment where we're all fully into the dating apps, you know, we start thinking maybe they're not working for us anymore. So, but if we can take a step back, how did you get into this line of work?
Oh, my goodness, it goes so far back now. I was always kind of dumb when it came to dating and getting the right women I wanted to go out with when I was younger. I wasn't completely hopeless. I wasn't feckless. But I never really got to where I wanted to be because I was my own worst enemy in many ways. I was a horrible people pleaser as a young kid. And what I had going for me is I've always really liked women, which as it turns out, especially in the year 2026, is increasingly rare for modos, members of the other sex, as I call them, to actually like the people they're trying to attract. I mean, that's just, I mean, go figure, right? But I've always just adored women in general. And, but I was always thinking that the ones I wanted were out of my league. I can't ask her out because, and it's funny because as I look back, it was errors of commission instead of omission rather than commission everywhere I go. I just didn't step up and ask this girl out. And so I missed out. And so after my divorce, which is a long story in its own podcast amongst.
As they always are. Yes.
Yeah. That was broken up by severe mental illness on my ex-wife's part. I just said, you know, I don't want that to happen again. And even though everybody said, well, you know, she's profoundly mentally ill, you didn't do anything wrong. You're a great husband. You're a great father. I go, well, it makes me feel like a victim. Don't like that feeling at all. I still don't like that feeling. I am anti-victimhood. And bring that into my practice, by the way. It's all about agency around here. And I said, I'm going to be the best man I can possibly be for the right woman. I'm going to do the self-work. And I'm also going to do the theoretically impossible, which is actually understand women.
Who really does? So that is possible.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, we could talk about that if you want, but it's a little off topic here. I believe women are as simple to understand as men are. And if you understand how men and women are together, you'll understand both much more effectively. But what happened was all of this work worked. And I'm not one of those guys who on paper, on online dating, is going to jump off the page at women. I'm not photogenic. I'm not particularly tall or handsome.
Well, you're cute from my vision here, view here.
Well, thank you. I actually, that was another problem that plagued me when I was a kid, is I always wanted to be 6'2", Sean Connery's James Bond. And I was always Rudy or Michael J. Fox. And I realized only as a 35-year-old adult, wait a minute, cute means you inspire affection. So if you're a cute guy, women want to touch you and hug you and love on you. And I'm like, that hasn't been a bad thing all these years. What if, you know, what was I thinking? You know, I'm trying to be something I'm not instead of just owning it, you know. And that was actually part of my story as I owned it. And I started bringing women around to functions and my buddies were like, what in the world is your secret? I mean, I would break up with a woman and like one of my buddies would have not seen me for a couple of weeks and go, hey, how's that unbelievable chick of yours? I go, oh yeah, she's not in my life anymore. It's like, what, are you gay? I'm like, no, I got different ones. And like, well, can I have her number? Like, let me see the new one. And so I had choice. I was spoiled for choice. And eventually I married my favorite woman I've ever met. No settling at all. And everybody started saying, including women I had been dating, you should write a book. You should tell these guys your story. And that's what I did. And 20 years later, my honey, who's a natural at this, but you know, she's always been a natural at this. And not in a douchey way, you know, not in a mean girl's way, but she's just adorable. And I've never met anybody who doesn't like my wife, even if they try to or need to. For some catty reason, they can't bring themselves to. And so, you know, then I've never looked back. And if this is the classic case of if I can do it, you can do it. And my wife and I walk the talk. We have a healthy relationship. Not perfect, but I mean, perfect isn't healthy either. So that answers your question. That's where we've been. It's always been about authenticity, pragmatic tips for what works. Nothing woo-woo or anything. If it works, we talk about it. And also The disappointing truth is we actually are pro-woman and pro-man. The red-pilled men go in their own way kind of guys, they don't like me. They want my message not to be out there because it messes with theirs. But unfortunately, and I think this goes right to the heart of what we're talking about today, Susan, most dating advice on YouTube is they're awful, stay away from them. And I don't understand how that's dating advice. And that's what we're seeing, and I think that's compounding the effect of the frustration people are seeing in this ersatz environment that is online dating nowadays. So hopefully that brings it full circle.
Yeah, interesting. So you mentioned, did you say red pill?
Yeah, the red-pilled guys. They're the ones who, it's basically an answer to feminism. Like, you know, women need a man like a fish needs a bicycle. Well, these guys are going, oh, yeah? well, you know, all you women are awful also. We should just stay away from you because you're going to drag us into divorce court and steal all our wealth and we'll never see our kids again. And we'll have to pay child support for kids who aren't even biologically ours. And, you know, they love that kind of talk. And yeah, and sometimes it's a lot more subtle than that.
Okay. So what was the title of your book that you wrote?
The first book I ever wrote, the one that kind of put us on the map, was called Deserve What You Want. And at the time, I thought, maybe I need a better title. You know, there was no Claude AI to workshop this with. I had to just go to Google. And the phrase, to my utter shock, deserve what you want, came up one time on all of Google, in quotes. I thought it was like this thing that everybody would have figured out by now, but it wasn't. It was actually kind of a novel approach. Everybody was telling each other, here's how to get what you want. Here's how to get this woman to get in bed, even though you just, you know, you don't deserve her. You're not a genetic lottery winner. And the women's dating advice was, here's how to say three simple words into a guy's ear to get him to buy you anything and stop watching porn, you know, and all that stuff. And nobody was saying, you know, it's to your great advantage to be the kind of person that the person you'd like to attract would also be attracted to. I mean, this was like a, you know, who knew, right? And that's always been where we're coming from, and it's popular with people who want really want results. It's unpopular with people who want an easy button. But that was the first book.
And so, X and Y Communication, you work with individuals on these challenges.
Well, I've done groups, mm-hmm. Right? I do master classes every month for a group of guys. But yeah, I've always loved one-on-one coaching. And it's because I'm an introvert. Believe it or not, I'm very.
You don't come off as one, but you know.
I'm not shy at all.
Yeah.
My energy comes from the kind of conversations you and I are having now, not big crowds. So I love working with people one on one or couples, and also I just really enjoy the guys and the women who come to us. I mean, they're never basket case people who are starting from zero. They're always very, very sharp people and have amazing stories and incredible success. And I've just been very thrilled and honored sometimes to be able to serve in helping these people on their journey.
Yeah, that's so cool. So getting back to the question at hand, sort of, so over the 20 years that you've been in this space, 20 plus years, so technology certainly has evolved. And at one point, like we said, the dating app seemed like, oh my God, we're going to meet people we would never meet in real life. This gives us such a bigger pool of like-minded people. So what happened to make that maybe not as true today?
Oh, what a huge question and an important one, because I don't think people are giving any thought to that. They're just kind of living in the moment saying, okay, here's my existential problem with dating apps. They're not working. Well, how did we get there? I think the first thing people need to remember, especially people under 40, which is starting to sound like an advanced age for something people not to know about. But, you know, when you're talking 30 years ago, we started seeing, you know, web URLs, World Wide Web URLs on TV. I mean, literally anybody under 45 doesn't remember a world without an internet in it. The words dating apps, that phrase, is not how online dating started. You needed the Apple smartphone to come along before dating apps were even a thing. And even after the iPhone came out, and obviously, you know, the competitors to it, Android and so forth, it took a few years for Tinder to hit. I mean, it's like a 2010 phenomenon. I remember I had someone I interviewed who had come up with Tinder too early. Like they came out with the idea for Tinder and launched the app like 2 days after the iPhone 1 hit. And nobody trusted or wanted it. So, you know, they fizzled and Tinder came a couple years later when people were settled in and ready for it.
My brother, who happens to be gay, introduced me to Grindr around that time, which maybe was the precursor to Tinder. And that was my first sort of knowledge that there were these ways to meet people online.
Yes, right. But until then, you had long, what's now known as long form online dating sites, your match.coms of the world. And, you know, online matchmaking sites like eHarmony. And this was the bonanza that you talked about. Not since high school had we been able to enter a world, you know, albeit a virtual one, where everybody was available and single.
Right. It's true. And in our demographic, more or less, you're right. High school is that world.
Right. And so up until, I mean, you know, we're going so far back now that we're sounding like dinosaurs, I think, to a lot of people. But there was a point in history where even digital photography wasn't mainstream yet. So up until like 2003, lots of people online didn't even have pictures. And the excuse was, well, I don't have a digital camera. Well, when digital cameras were in every flip phone starting 2003 and digital cameras were cheap, there was this golden age, I'll call it, between probably about 2003 and 2009, where you could go online, see pictures of people, read through their narratives, and have a pretty good idea of who you were dealing with. And then if you, unfortunately for everybody, you still had to be a Pulitzer Prize winning author or else you'd get nowhere. I mean, authorship, being able to write something cute and flowery, was as important as being photogenic. And of course, as you know, certain people are much better looking in person than they are in photos and vice versa. And if you're not photogenic, and I would argue being photogenic usually portends someone who is a more soulful, deeper appearance in their eye. There's more going on in their eyes when you meet them. So I don't think not being photogenic is necessarily a cut on somebody.
Right. And then it's the quality, not understanding composition and bathrooms.
Yeah, all of that. Right. My wife, I'm not throwing her under the bus, but she's dyslexic. So writing wasn't her strong suit, but I had actually, I recognized the dyslexia in her writing. So I looked past it. But, you know, it was actually easier and more effective. Then what happened was my wife and I were watching TV together when the first iPhone ad came out. And, of course, Apple was brilliantly able to launch things. And it was game over. I mean, I remember I sat with my wife thinking, this is what it feels like to witness the future happening. Because usually it's so subtle, you know. Like, you know, AIDS, for example, stopped being a scourge on our society gradually. There wasn't a big headline one morning. Meanwhile, the iPhone hit and boom, the world changed. So there wasn't always the online dating app. What happened with the online dating apps was manifold. So let's just cut to the chase. First of all, it trained people to be unbelievably shallow. I mean, a split second, yes or no.
That's right. Swipe left, yep.
That caused a shift in how people view and value relationships with each other. Second of all, there was a mass misunderstanding. And we're talking specifically about dating apps now, not the whole idea of social media and smartphones and how that's ruining us all as a human race is a deeper.
Okay. For next time. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's just stick to the dating apps. Also, it made it so even the beautiful people didn't know who the heck they were dealing with. Like all I got is this picture and hardly anything. So people who were perfectly attractive, and when I say perfectly attractive, I mean literally, would show up, look at each other, and go, nah, you know what? So the failure was already baked in. The other thing that was going on there is it caused people to have a very short leash on their attention span. In other words, okay, I swiped right on you, now what? Well, you know what? Someone better just swipe right on me 10 minutes later, so whatever. You know, and people got spoiled for choice. So it becomes a dog chasing its tail and just falling down, having caught nothing. Then there was, and this is, I think, the most significant, and I'll let you riff off of this for sure. I think it really highlighted the differences between men and women and how they process attraction and dating. In the very early ages of dating apps in the wild, wild west, you could just swipe right, swipe left, willy-nilly, okay? I think Coffee Meets Bagel was the first one who tried to put a rev limiter on that, you know, some kind of boundary on that, and it didn't work. You know, you're only allowed to, you know, choose wisely because you only get 10 per day. People are like, well, you suck, you know. In the Wild West, we trained ourselves to swipe. I mean, there was literally men's dating advice that says swipe, you know, positive, choose every one of them and just see who comes back, all right? So men are proverbially spreading their seed to the masses, thinking, you know, we'll see what wears a skirt and comes back, you know, just choose them all.
Right. Men swipe right on 90% of the women. Women swipe right on 90% of the men.
Yeah. Right. And so what happens is you get women who aren't even used to getting a whole lot of positive male attention thinking they're Disney princesses. Oh my God, I totally underestimated how popular I am. I just signed up yesterday and I have 200 men who want me. And then so she, you know, she goes boutique shopping, chooses her three Disney princes who, you know, probably have fake pictures and are nothing like that in real life because of what we just mentioned, writes them all back and gets crickets because those guys don't really want her. Someone better than her came along and they're like, well, this sucks. What's wrong? But they've got this mindset that they're popular, when in reality, they're not. So, right. And so women became very choosy, and women are starting to look at this very transactionally and very superficially. Well, because when I see a picture, I want him tall. I want him to have six-pack abs. I want him to be a genetic lottery winner and make, you know, eight figures. And this even trickled down for a time after the apps happened to the long-form dating sites where women were saying, if you're not 6'2", black-haired, blue-eyes, Catholic, and make over $150,000 a year, don't bother. And if you run the demographic numbers on that guy, he's 1 in 10,000.
Yes, only 14% of men are over 6 feet tall, apparently.
So well, that's just the start. I mean, how many of them are black-haired, blue-eyed dudes? I mean, you know, so you start running the numbers and women are like, oh, they got to be around the landscape's littered with these people. One time when I was on Match, I ran a nationwide search for my perfect woman and got three answers. And the whole country.
Nationwide.
This was nationwide. This was like 2004. Yeah. So, I mean, people don't realize how the demographics narrow.
And plus, if I can interject, the apps themselves are designed to keep you engaged, to keep you in the paid version of the app, right? So on top of the flawed system, you're sort of engaged and kept hopeful that it's going to work.
Yeah, when COVID hit, it literally was a captive audience, and people felt used. Like, why are you addicting me to this when there's not even any chance to meet anybody? And then since then, you know, kind of anticipating your next question, AI has just made it so your pictures and what you write aren't even you anymore.
Yep.
So, I mean, there's just nothing of substance left. It is dead. It is hollowed out. It is online dating is a shell of itself and has been for several years.
Okay, let's take a pause there because I want to take a quick break. And when we come back, let's really dig into that because that's a big statement. You know, online dating is dead and we need to figure out what replaces it besides, you know, singles events and maybe speed dating. But stay with us. We're with Scott McKay and we'll be right back.
You ever heard the story of Harry? He was a legend around here. Until one afternoon, he left and never came back. Turns out, Harry went and made himself a website using Squarespace. Used Squarespace domains to buy artisanseatcushions.com. And he built a beautiful site with an online store to sell his artisan seat cushions. Now Harry's sitting on a fortune. And if our Harry can do it, anyone can. Build your business at squarespace.com. Use offer code EVERYTHING for 10% off your website or domain.
And we're back with Scott McKay, and we're talking about the demise of dating apps. So, Scott, what is the next step? I mean, the reality is the apps aren't literally going away. Do you think people are exiting them in droves? And if not, you know, what are the alternatives?
Well, the statistics say they are. Mm. You know, the online dating companies, the ones like Match Group or Public, they're bleeding money. People realize we've been had, and this isn't working. It isn't working even for people who for whom it should be working. You mentioned that the apps, they kind of jumped the shark and said, "Ah, let's just keep people addicted. Let's worship the almighty dollar instead of helping people get results." And people are wise to that now, right? You also, what's happened is you've had fundamental changes to how men and women interact. More and more people just aren't dating at all. I would argue the word dating could be dead. You know, it, just the idea of going out on dates and are we dating? I mean, who has any utility for that anymore? So I like you, you like me, let's hook up. Hookup culture you don't hear about anymore because people are having less sex than ever before. People are just are replacing needs for human with electronics.
Oh, that's disheartening. I suppose, yeah, it's also, really. So I know a lot of guys are fed up with the dating in terms of having to pay for dinners 3 and 4 times a week and with no
single maxing, right? Yes. Yeah. Anything single maxing is dating got too expensive. Therefore, I'm just going to date myself and, you know, spend all my money on me, which of course is the most 2020s thing ever. Well, first of all, it's an excuse. It's a cop-out because, you know, dates don't – my first date with my lovely wife was at IHOP, and I still have the receipt from it. It was $14 for breakfast for two, plus tip. You know, you don't have to spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars. You can go for a walk in the park. I mean, I had a first date back in the day where I took a woman furniture shopping with me because I just moved into a new house after the divorce and needed to, you know, furnish it. She loved it. She thought it was the best. Didn't cost her anything. It cost me a lot of furniture.
I mean, you had to impress
the dating budget.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think, you know, having to spend a lot of money on first dates, it's, you know. Plus, there's also a West of the Hudson thing where if it happens in New York, it's everybody's experience, and I don't think that's true either. But, you know, the AI thing with being able to put your pictures up there that aren't you and having – ChatGPT write your narrative for you. It is not helpful in online dating because it's not authentic. And what's happened, though, the other thing that's trended is the idea of everything being so transactional. I mean, I've got a Substack piece on my desk I'm editing right as we speak. Well, not literally, but I mean, it's in another window on how, you know, yeah, men and women have gotten into transactional relationships, and when they're not getting what they want from it anymore, they throw each other away. They've got disposable relationships. That has trickled down to the rest of the family, the whole mishpuka, you know? Kids are, you know, if they come from a broken home, the daughter will say, well, you know, mom lets me stay out all night and doesn't make me do chores. And dad will go, well, no, not in this house. I'm going to raise you to be a young woman of character. She goes, well, then bye. And she never calls dad again, doesn't take his calls. And she's 14. She doesn't have any use for him anymore. The idea of family mattering, people are going, where did that idea come from again? They're just people or humans who I've happened to cohabit with. People don't talk to their siblings anymore. People graduate from college, never call their parents anymore.
I did have a guest on, and they talked about that estrangement from between adult kids and parents, and they blame them for all their childhood trauma, which we all have, but parents.
Well, I mean, it's not even that. It's more cavalier than that. It's just I feel like it. Like, I don't understand why this matters. Like, what's the point?
You think technology has done that? Technology has just numbed us to genuine emotions?
Yeah, yeah. Everybody is anonymous on the internet. We treat everybody terribly. I call it the Siri effect. You know, when you realize Siri's a robot, you start ordering Siri around and being rude to it. I was with an engineer one time, and we were workshopping something on AI that he was helping me with because he didn't have the right answer, and we were on Zoom together. And he was being super syrupy nice to me and absolutely rude and mean and calling ChatGPT names. And all I could think to myself is, that's who this guy really is.
Wow. You are who you how you treat your AI platform.
You are who you treat people you're most comfortable with, and who do you have less to lose with than AI who can't fight back? And it's just, to me, it's almost like a new acid test, like how you treat waiters, whether you kick dogs or something. You know, it's just, you know, how do you talk to AI? I mean, this is what we've gotten to, where we're in a post-human era. And I don't see it getting better. So what you know, you wanted to know what we do instead. Well, there's two answers. Unless, I don't want to hijack your show. Are you ready for that? Or is there something you...
Take it away. No, please. I want to know. We all want to know.
I'm very passionate about this. And I tend to, you know...
Just do it.
Two things. First of all, the old school is the new school. Go out in the real world, go figure, and meet a woman at the grocery store. Go to the farmer's market on Saturday morning or whatever and just talk to humans. And guys are like, well, what if she rejects me? Well, if you're not out, if you're not hitting on her, if you're just making a conversation, then you're just going to see where it goes. Women don't think like that. Women don't think acceptance, rejection when a guy's talking to me. That's how men are wired for competition. Women are just like, oh, a boy's talking to me. How fun. You know, and she may be married or single or whatever, but it's a conversation. If she happens to be available and you happen to like each other, voila, you have an opportunity. This, we have to remember, this is how it always went before online dating.
You ask for a number and you write it down, and then you wait by the phone if he's going to call.
Sure. Yes, exactly. Even before there were phones, this is what went on. All right. So what happened was, you know, the online dating promise was, we'll introduce you to people you could never have met otherwise, and just a bevy of people you would never have met. And for the golden age that I told you about, 03 to 09-ish, it delivered massively. It was fantastic. I met my wife on Match. But then, you know, the wheels started falling off, and here we are. So that's the first thing, is the new school has to be the old school. We have to go old school. Because that's human. That's how this is supposed to be, is human interaction. The other one is, you have more ways on your computer or your smartphone to interact with people and to enhance your social life than just online dating sites. It has branched out immensely. So if we keep our blinders on and have that tunnel vision of must make dating apps work, you're missing out on a whole lot of ways you could have thought out of the box to use your computer or your smartphone to facilitate meeting people. The fall out of bed answer there is, you know, meetup.com, where are they having hikes, whatever. But, you know, you have like timeleft.com, which are like curated dinner parties for strangers. You know, there are apps online that will help you meet people in real life if that's not necessarily your thing, or you feel like you're a little rusty.
I had the founder of Plus One on, and he's based in Miami, and that's, they do, anyone can set up an event and then invite people to it in real life. Yeah.
Yep. They're travel buddy groups. You know, people can form groups of 8 people who'd like to go to Paris together. You know, or go to this national park together, stay a little closer to home. You know, there are a myriad of ways to do that if we just look for them. And that's out of the box thinking for a lot of people.
Yeah, it's so funny. It was such the norm, like you say, in the old days, and now it's this revolutionary idea. Everything old is new again. And even getting back to the dating apps as they exist today, I think, what do you think about, even when you're texting with someone using AI, what should I say to this one? Can you give me a cute response to that? I mean, it becomes so artificial, doesn't it?
Well, it's actually nothing new. As soon as we got SMS and texting, it exonerated men from having to pick up the phone and call women and figure out what they're going to say when they're talking to her. You suddenly had room to strategize. You could think this out for a second, you know, like, Like, who wants to be a millionaire? You want to talk that out? You want to think about this? You want to phone a friend? You know, you could do all those things. And texting is still hard to get right. It's still. And what happens is based on, well, media proliferation. I haven't got. Well, let me finish the thought, then I'll give you the example. Based on media proliferation, people's expectations are unreasonable. And it's not gender specific, you know. You know, I have a guy whose wife got mad at him and is like, why can't you be like more like Rip Wheeler on Yellowstone? I need a real man.
Okay, that's a big issue, yes, this real man.
You know, Rip Wheeler is a caricature. I mean, you know, Rip Wheeler isn't Rip Wheeler in real life. My advice to him was to take her to the train station, but I don't know if that was very good advice.
What is that?
You're not a Yellowstone person, are you?
I guess I've watched this sporadically, so it's all right. Reference. Okay, got it.
The train station in Yellowstone, it might be a spoiler if people have never seen it, is when they need to kill someone, they need them gone. There's this place, this stretch of road, you know, just across the state line that's not in any incorporated county that no one ever checks on, and they throw them over the cliff after they off them. So that's the train station in Yellowstone. They have to conveniently get rid of someone who died. No, but it's an unreasonable request. First of all, Rip Wheeler is not always a nice guy. He's not, not from a nice guy perspective, but he kills people. He could.
Right. But I think what she's saying is, I want you to be more masculine. I want you to be more in control.
Right. Yeah. Right. Feel. Emotionally, you know, emotionally calibrated, you know, and, but it's still an unreasonable expectation if she's watching TV and expecting that. I mean, you know, and I also said to the guy, well, is she Beth?
Yeah, right.
I hope not, but I mean, you know, I mean, Beth, there's no women out there who are really like Beth either. They can come close, but I mean, they're not really. Like
Look,
Beth,
there are a few in Boca, but mostly not. Yeah.
Well, I mean, Beth is, you know, surviving being blown up and everything and brushing it off. And, you know, Beth's just so laser tongued in the right situation. You know, Beth is every man's horror story when it comes to a pickup situation.
Mm-hmm.
So,
they want them
to, you know, but the point being, we can have a lot of fun with it, but there's just a lot of unreasonable expectations. Porn creates unreasonable expectations.
Yes. Yeah. We've talked about that.
Mm-hmm. You know, everything media, really, you know, and then we see everybody's highlight reel on social media. And it's just created a situation where nobody feels like they can meet those expectations. I'm not going to get the person I want. I'm not going to ever be enough for another.
So people are leaving the dating apps. What are the apps doing about it? I noticed several of them have started matchmaking divisions. What do you think about matchmakers?
Well, you know, I don't want to throw matchmakers under the bus, but I had someone who wanted to be a guest on my show who was bragging about charging men $500,000 for her service. I think this guy should just go to the grocery store and ask a chick how to choose the right avocado. That's what I think. I think it'd be a lot cheaper than $500,000. I mean, you know, I just don't buy, I'm too busy for the most important, arguably the most important thing in my life. I mean, you know, what, say if he's a man of faith, am I just too busy for church or fellowship? I mean, is everything important in this guy's life out the door because he's too busy making money or jet?
Well, if he has, like the, I have had a couple of times, Rose Lambert, who's the Palm Beach matchmaker, and she's sort of works with the billionaires, and apparently it's a lot of work to curate the women and get that perfect balance of.
Well, I also think you're only going to attract women who want a billionaire. And if you listen to Mark Cuban's story about how he met his wife, it's the opposite frame. I needed to only date women who didn't know who I was. Yeah, and I find it to be very transactional and shallow. Like, you know, this is a guy who's 45 and he's got six pack abs and makes this much money, and he's looking for a woman who is this set of very shallow circumstances. And the truth of the matter is, you know, you can write down whatever checklist you want of who you think you're looking for. And then someone who comes through the door and you never expected them and they're perfect and you didn't even know. It's like you didn't even know what to write down. You know, I joke. It's as if I wrote a requisition to God himself, and he sent me her. Like, I mean, she's like all of my celebrity crushes mashed up together. I mean, she's not, because I didn't have a mental image of her. I didn't see her coming. There were things that I didn't even realize I appreciated so much in a female human being that she brought to the table that reminded me of that. And I really think whatever it is that makes us humanoid and takes away any stench of transactional behavior, I am all for. Now, I know matchmakers who have a much more holistic approach than just writing a list of these are this person's demands, and if you meet them, you know. And I think that's great. And I understand people outsource this stuff, and they outsource everything in their life. But it would be a better situation, even for a billionaire. I mean, maybe it's one of the pitfalls of being a billionaire, and I know there are many.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, firsthand.
No. Yes, I imagine it's challenging in its own way.
Yeah, I'm one degree of separation several times from people who are billionaires. So people either I'm coaching or people who are adjacent. Okay, and there are pitfalls to it. I mean, you pay a social price for this, and I think it would be much better if a billionaire could go out in the real world and meet women organically. But I just don't think people want to do any work. They don't want to work on their social skills. They don't want to work on being more social. They don't want to work on, you know, I have an entire program for men on how to be hilarious. And guys are like, I can't do that. Too much work. These are guys with master's degrees, and they go to the golf range and hit 200 golf balls, you know, and it's like, you don't have time for this. People want the easy button. And I think it's because the dating apps have told them.
Yeah. You know, I've done two recent episodes with sugar dating experts. One is a guy who has a podcast called Secrets of a Sugar Daddy, and the other one is the founder of SugarMatchmaking.com. And they talk a lot about that it's transactional, but it's more than transactional. There's mentoring and business help and all kinds of things in the relationship.
The just be mentor zone that older guys get into with younger women. Yeah, I had the guy who founded Seeking.com on my show, and he has met his honey on his own platform. Yeah, and it started out as that, but it became so much more. More power to him. I mean, you know. But, I mean, honestly, truthfully, you can't go wrong by being attractive and trusting that. The biggest separator between men who are successful with women and men who aren't, and I'm living proof, is very simple. They believe they should be successful with women. Most men, they're like, oh, she's out of my league. Some other guy's going to want her. She's just going to reject me. It's going to go poorly again. You know, I'll get guys who troll me. You know, every time I put advice up there on YouTube or whatever, they'll say, oh, that works for other guys, but not me. So you're a fraud. I go, I'm a fraud. You know, you're the one telling me nothing works for you. Maybe you're kidding yourself, but you can't tell them that.
Right. Confidence is extremely attractive. I mean, you're right. It's not about having, just like for women, that you don't have to have the perfect body and the perfect face and hair and makeup and facelift and everything else.
Nobody even knows what that means anymore. I don't know what the perfect body even means.
That's a very good point. We could get into that with GLPs and what the new perfect body is.
Well, I think most men don't prefer as skinny women as most women think.
Yay to that. Okay. Interesting. Yeah, I guess.
I don't understand the whole market for women getting six-pack abs to attract men. We're not attracted. Yeah, you know, I mean, I guess some guys are if they're real fitness buffs. But I mean, women having six-pack abs will not be at the top of a man's attractiveness list.
Okay.
The women are thinking, if I do this, I'll get a boyfriend. It's like,
yeah.
That's a masculine thing.
So we're kind of at the wrap-up point. So let's give us some hope here. Like, what is the next step with the dating apps? Do people stay on them if they're in the dating
world? No, you quit them. They're dead. Really? It's like, you know, let's do a podcast on how to make the most of your, you know, Blu-ray disc player. They're done. They're gone. They're not coming back.
But
yeah.
I mean, really? Yeah. So, okay. All right. So you're off the dating apps, but you want to date. And yes, you can go to meetups. You can go to singles bars.
You can go. Well, not even that. You don't even have to go to a bar. You can go anywhere in the real world and just be ready to actually talk to people. People don't talk to each other. But look, I take guys out in field and coach them. With my wife's blessing, sometimes she comes along. Because we're not teaching guys how to hit on women. We're teaching guys how to make conversation and be interesting. And that's not even a sexually oriented activity. And as a matter of fact, it is such a rare activity that when guys get off the plane and we do our, you know, go out and have a casual dinner together after they arrive, I say, I want you to plan a mental trigger in your head for this weekend. I want you to take note anytime you see a guy go talk to a woman he's never met before. Just take mental note. Just take mental note. And, you know, we're going to go to shopping areas. Like I said, farmers markets. We have great ones here in San Antonio. We're going to go out at night and go to these new school nighttime venues where they have girls who eat fire and, you know, the play, you know, cornhole and have Christmas lights all year round. And it's all outside and people are meant to be social. It's not like a dark, smoky bar. I just watch. And the guy will say Sunday afternoon, darn it, I didn't see a single dude talk to any woman. You go to these places and there's tables full of people all showed up to.
Right. So you're saying guys will fly into San Antonio for a weekend coaching with you? How does that work?
Usually they fly in Thursday afternoon and leave Sunday afternoon, and it's immersive. We'll talk to 100 or more women over the course of 4 days and take them out for a nice dinner afterwards, first class all the way. Doesn't cost $500,000. And what happens is instead of giving them a fish, they've been taught how to fish.
So the point is not for them to literally meet women in this weekend, but to understand the process.
I will do demos and model it as long as it takes. I'm not shy. I told you I was an introvert, but I'm not shy. I have proven over time. Let me put it this way. I've been doing this since 2008, this particular service. That's a long time. I don't do them every weekend because I die, okay? So, I mean, it's selective. I only do a number of them a year. But I've done enough of them that if it wasn't going to work and women really were rude and loved rejecting men and throwing drinks in their face and being these horrible people that the red-pilled guys claim they are, it would have happened at least once by now. And we have never had a rude rejection ever. We've had women who aren't very social. We have women who lack social skill. We've had to carry them a little. But for the most part, they're just very good, often surprisingly positive conversations. And the guys are left, if they're in their 40s or 50s, I've had guys in their 60s come. They're kicking themselves for not figuring this out earlier in life, that women aren't that scary.
Interesting. So this is this called Deserve What You Want? Is that the name?
Deserve What You Want is a tagline for X and Y Communications. So the actual name of that particular coaching plan is called a 10 Plus Live. So my coaching, I have something called a 10 Plus program, which is not based on the number of sessions you have, but the result you want to get. I don't count the sessions. And we put it down to 10 topics that are progressive. Like, you know, you start here, you end up here, and if you get to this point, you're going to be amazed. And, you know, we can have 3 or 4 sessions live or over Zoom to knock out and master each one of those particular topics. And there's no deadline. It doesn't expire. I just believe that guys don't sign up for a bunch of phone calls. They sign up for results. And I guarantee results. So I have a very extensive vetting process mutually for everybody when we get on board. And when I decide I can offer the guarantee to you, there's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing to fix. You don't need a therapist. You're ready to rock. I think everybody needs a therapist a little, but you understand what I mean.
Right, right. So you you go through this 10-plus coaching, and then you ask them to apply it in real life in their local area where they live.
Yes, mm-hmm. but often with great success. And, of course, everybody's different. And that may mean different recommendations for different people based on their milieu and also what they're good at and what they're not so good at. And the 10-plus live is kind of a culmination. It's kind of a major event where they show up here in San Antonio, which is a nice place to hang out in over the course of 4 days, and really just immerse themselves, and they leave a machine at this.
Have you had anyone end up getting married after taking your class?
Of course. Yes. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of times, you know, once they get what they want, they forget about their good old coach because they don't need me anymore and they'll disappear. But I'll get an email like 6 months, 2 years later going, here's my dream woman and I owe it all to you. Thank you so much. You know, and I smile and it's good to know that it works and it does. A lot of guys who are coming off very tough situations, widowed, divorced, or they get into a rebound situation with the wrong woman. And they have to rebuild or repair, and it's nice to see them get back on their feet and make something good of it.
Well, that's great. I can tell you're a great mentor and coach for these people. You have a really nice demeanor. I appreciate hearing about it. What's the best way for them to connect with you?
The best thing to do is just to go to scottmckay.net. And you know, it was kind of cute. You said up front, you know, Scott with one T. That's what all the girls called me in seventh grade was Scott with one T. That was my.
Yeah, and McKay is no A. It's McKay. So.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, there was a movie that came out like last year where it was something McKay, McCay, and people will misspell my name McCay sometimes. And that movie is the only instance I've ever seen of anyone named McCay. It's always K. So, Scott McKay. It's not. It used to be Mackay years ago.
Oh, back in the old country.
Coming from the Isle of Skye in Scotland.
Yes.
But we're Americans nowadays, so it's just McKay. ScottMckay.net, not .com. And when you go there, you'll be able to get to my podcasts. And also, the aforementioned book, Deserve What You Want, it's yours free when you go there.
Well, I'm definitely going to read it because I, too, would like to deserve what I want. Do you work with women? Or you do? Oh, that's
wife is a world-class dating coach. Interestingly enough, most of the women who come on board want to work with me because they want to understand men better and they want to hear from a guy. And most of the guys who come, you know, they want Emily's opinion to figure out whether it's really true that women think this way and feel this way. But yeah, my wife basically runs a lot of the back office stuff for the company. I'm the talker, and she's the stem.
She's the brains.
Yeah, she's the brains. That's.
Yeah, yeah. So, all right. Any closing advice for anyone who's saying, you know what, I now am going to get off the dating apps, but I am more committed than ever to wanting to find my person. What should they do?
Well, let's talk about first more who you are rather than what you do. I said that the number one differentiator, and I would say this is not gender specific, okay? So I know you have a lot of women listening, is believe you have every right to be attractive. This isn't someone else's victory. This isn't, you know, you're not out of the league. There's people aren't out of your league. Okay. I think women can get, like you know, we alluded to before, women can get very caught up in body type and I've got to lose weight and I've got to get Botox or whatever. I think you'll be amazed how there are men who appreciate you for who you are. If you think about it, perfect people kind of suck. We don't trust them and we're kind of resentful. I mean, you know, so being perfect is not a great thing. I talk about perfect imperfection, being perfectly imperfect. I would say that it used to be a large margin between the first and second factors. You know, if you believe you should attract someone, you will. But I think there's a second place that's fast approaching. And unfortunately, it has to be said nowadays because it's becoming more and more of a problem. And it's this: you have to actually like the gender you're trying to attract. I talk to people online, offline. They can't stand women if they're men, or they can't stand men if they're women. And women are like, "But can you find me a good husband?" And it's like, no. Not with that attitude. No one in their right mind is going to sign up for a relationship with someone who can't stand their entire gender, let alone them in particular. You've got to find it in your heart to forgive these people who have done bad to you simply because they were another gender. I think if every one of us reaches deep, we can find someone of our own gender who's been a jerk too. But we don't, you know, self-deprecate. So there are golden-hearted people and black-hearted people of both genders. You stay away from the latter. Go for the former. Most of us are kind of in the middle. Most of us have a gray area. That's the second thing. If you don't like people in general, let alone, you know, people of the other gender, forget about it. I also think that, you know, masculinity and femininity are not social constructs. This is its own podcast. I believe masculinity and femininity are both meant to be virtuous, and anything that's toxic in either toxic masculinity or femininity is a perversion of that virtue. And men provide and protect, and women bring everything that's fun, joy, beautiful, and playful to the world, which is what we all live for, and that's what's most important. And men are just trying to keep that safe and reap the benefits. That doesn't mean men are bigger, better, more powerful, or superior. If anything, I would say femininity is the higher calling. That's the third thing is, okay, you're a man, you're not terrible for being masculine. If you're a woman, being feminine is not weakness leaving your body. And the last one is character. Why don't we care about who we are and doing the right thing when nobody's looking anymore? No one ever talks about that. I have yet to hear one matchmaker ever say this guy's looking for a woman of good character.
Wow. Right. Which should be so.
These are the people who are built to last in a relationship because they're good, decent people with a moral standard that transcends what am I trying to get out of this relationship.
Right. Got it. I love that. I love that. I'll get you to send me that so I can include it in the description. And it's been, like you say, there is another podcast or two in this conversation, but you've been absolutely fascinating to me, and I'm sure my listeners are really engaged with a lot of things you're talking about, and they can find out more at scottmckay.net, scottmckay.net, and XMY Communications. So, Scott, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Susan. I appreciate it. Time's flown. This has been a wonderful conversation. Thank you.
I love it, and I look forward to maybe we'll talk again. In the meantime, if you enjoyed this episode and want to connect with Scott, be sure to do so. Please subscribe, follow, and leave us a review. I'm Susan Shore, and this has been Dateless in Del Rey. No matter how much technology changes, the search for love is ultimately human. So don't forget that, and we'll see you next time.
If you can make a dish, you can make a signature recipe and showcase it on your beautiful website that you built with Squarespace. And if you can make a stitch, you can make an outfit and put it on your online store that you built with Squarespace. And if you can hit the pose, you can teach the class that they can book on your site that you built with Squarespace. Because whatever your business, you can build it at squarespace.com. Use offer code EMPIRE for 10% off your website or domain.